So welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Shuswap Climate Action Society's all candidates, well, most of the candidates, some of the candidates, debate on climate action and the climate crisis. We acknowledge that we are on the unceded and unsurrendered territory of the Sequepec Nation. And I'd just like to introduce our moderator, Warren Bell. Warren is a co-founder and past founding president of the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment. He's actively involved in environmental and social justice issues in this community, the province, nationally, and internationally. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Warren. Thanks.
So Julia, thank you once again. So I'm going to talk a little bit about background issues to do with the climate, and then we'll, as it turns out, go back and forth between the two candidates who have made it to the meeting tonight. There are three who have not. I'll name them in a sec. But just a little background information that I think is relevant to what we're talking about tonight. I think everybody probably on this call who lives in this area knows that over the last several decades, we've seen a steadily increasing parade of extreme weather events, heat domes, drought, wildfires, atmospheric rivers, and intense windstorms. The economic cost of the destruction they have caused runs into the billions of dollars, and it is important that we elect leaders who understand and will act to protect communities from the effects of the climate crisis. Now, in response to an invitation from the Shuswap Climate Action Society, as it turns out, two out of the five candidates have turned up this evening, of those running in the provincial election. The two who are with us tonight are on screen right now, Sylvia Lindgren, who is representing the BC NDP, and Jed Weeb, who is representing the BC Green Party. You can wave, Jed. So they know it's not me and it's not Sylvia. The candidates who are not with us tonight, as you've just heard, Greg McCune is running as an independent candidate. David Williams is running on behalf of the BC Conservative Party. I may be able to fill in some of his responses because the radio station interviewed him, yours truly in particular, earlier today at the radio station, and his comments I might be able to summarize some of them. There's a fifth candidate who from the beginning was not able to come, and that's Sherry Roy, who's running as an independent. So I'd like to welcome everybody here in the audience to this event. The purpose of it is to help you decide which candidate is best equipped to address the climate challenge that we all face, whether by mitigating planetary heating or by helping individual citizens and communities adapt to it. Now, we're going to have a series of questions, and the first question is designed to be easy, and I think it should be very easy for candidates to answer, and this is the question. And I'll start with, we'll do ladies first, Sylvia. Could you please name the party you represent, if you do, and we know that you do, and share a sentence or two about why you chose to run for election?
Absolutely. Thank you, Warren. My name is Sylvia Lindgren, and I'm running for the BC NDP. The reason that I chose to run for the BC NDP is a lifelong commitment to advocating for people. And the BC NDP is the only party that talks about equity, inclusion, fighting for people who can't fight for themselves, speaking for people who, for whatever reason, are unable to advocate for themselves.
And by the way, I should mention that we're just giving a minute to each of you to answer this question because it's pretty straightforward.
For sure. So I share the values of the NDP. I am an advocate for people. I fight for change. I stand for no man left or no person left behind. And I believe that that's the same values that the BC NDP stand for.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And you're well within time. Jed, would you like to answer the same question? The party you represent and why you chose to run?
Yeah, hi, I'm Jed Wee. I've lived in the Shuswap all my life, and I'm a farmer, and that's why I'm running for the BC Green Party in this election. We've been hearing about climate change our whole lives, and the government hasn't been doing anything about it. And now experts are telling us there's still hope to prevent the worst case scenario, but we need to give a wartime effort, and we need to do it now. And I also represent the Green Party because, and I'm going to correct Sylvia here, it is the NDP is not the only party. We are also the party that wants to put well-being, people and planet first. We want the well-being. We measure our success, the government's success, by how well they take care of the people's basic needs and their well-being.
Thank you, Jed. So we'll move on to question number two, which is the following, and you have 2 minutes for this particular question. We'll start with Jed this time. Do you accept the overwhelming consensus of scientific research and opinion, which states that the rapid and unnatural heating of Earth's climate, now widely referred to as the climate crisis, is real and is caused by human activities, primarily by the burning of fossil fuels?
Yes, I absolutely accept that that's true. The evidence is completely overwhelming. We have known this for so many decades. It is bizarre to cast any doubt on it. It would be as strange as saying that cigarettes don't cause cancer at this point, given the overwhelming nature of the evidence. And this is something that we can tackle. We have the technology to do it. And we just need the political will. And one thing we can do is stop subsidizing oil and gas companies the way the NDP has for the last 7 years in a very major, massive way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Sylvia, you've got the question. What's your response to it?
So, this is an area where the Greens and the NDP and Jed and I are all in complete agreement that the climate change is real. There's no doubt about it. It's caused by and accelerated by the amount of greenhouse gases that we put into the air by heating our homes, by driving our cars, by using fertilizers in agriculture. There are so many contributing factors. And we need to take responsibility for that. But we also need to remember that this is a global issue. We are all on the same planet. We are all breathing the same air. And while it's incredibly important for our government to do everything that they can, it's also incredibly important for us each as individuals to be doing everything that they can. And I mean, yeah, this is the way that I've lived my life for a long time. I drive an electric car. I've composted since before composting was cool. I shop at secondhand stores. Those are all things that are my own values. Those are the things that I live by. That's the things that I've relied on my whole life. So, it's important that in order to represent people and to fight for something to try to move the government in the direction that we all want them to go, that it has to be people who are authentic, people that have been living this way for a long time and believe wholeheartedly that this is the answer. And that is me. That's what I stand for.
Thank you, Sylvia. We'll move on to the next question, which is again a question for which you'll have 2 minutes to respond. I'll start with Sylvia this time. What do you believe are the main risks to BC, that's to its citizens, its infrastructure, its economy from climate change? What are the main risks to citizens?
So I think there are a number of risks, actually. The big obvious ones are things like atmospheric rivers washing out our infrastructure, our roadways. The flooding that we saw in 2021 was unprecedented. It was impressive how quickly some of the repairs were done, but those repairs are being done at a level that is preparing us for worse events to come in the future. So there's a huge economic risk from climate change because of the kinds of things that we could lose. We have a huge issue with food security, for instance. when a lot of our food is coming from the Calgary region or the Vancouver region, and we are risking that roads could wash out, that mountainsides could come down, landslides, forest fires, all of those things impact how we get around in our province, how our food gets around. And so there are many things that we can be doing to mitigate that. We need to make sure that we have our own food production in our area. The 100-mile diet is really where we should be aiming right now. We need to make sure that when things like this happen, D. Dutchman Dairy is able to step up production and make sure that everybody can take milk home that day, because that's what happened the last time. The Shuswap's already very good at this kind of thing. We pulled together. We didn't see the kind of infighting that we saw in other places, like the United States, for instance. People cooperated here. Nobody was hoarding toilet paper. We need to make sure that we're working together. I think that's what we do well in the Shuswap already. So while there are big risks, I think, you know, changes in flooding, changes in landslides, our weather, all those things matter. But we're going to pull through it because we're going to work together to do it.
Thank you, Sylvia. Jed, if you'd care to answer, you've got the question. What are the main risks to citizens of BC from climate change?
Yeah, for me, I'm sitting here dreaming of living until 2072, when I'll be 88. And I'm hoping that we have a livable world then. That's why I've stepped up to be a candidate. It's not too late to have hope. We can do this, but the risks are enormous. Right now we live in a flourishing natural world. Climate change will ruin that. There's 2/3 of North American bird species are at risk. That's just an example. You can imagine what it will do to the world that we depend on. So as I totally agree with Sylvia, food security is huge. How can we farmers possibly farm? I just had an amazing growing season. You know, it's nice. Every now and then you get an amazing growing season. Maybe it's because we just had the hottest May, June, July, September ever in recorded history on planet Earth. But it's not always like that. When the climate warms up, you have extreme events like Sylvia mentioned, atmospheric rivers and forest fires. Forest fires will only get worse if we don't tackle climate change. And yeah, I don't want to just talk about the doom and gloom, but I think it's really important to recognize we're living in a world where, well, I've grown up my whole life been in a state of grief about where ecological collapse. And now that I know about climate change, I'm experiencing climate grief, but I've moved through the stages of grief and I'm at acceptance and hope. Now it's time to do something about it. We still can. We can make a wartime effort. And that's why I've joined the Green Party. Let's do it.
Thank you, Jed. I indicated that I would give an idea of what I recall from the conversation I had this morning with David Williams. Dave Williams said that unlike the party leader, he believes that climate change is real. He didn't give some concrete measures of the risks that people are exposed to, but I think he sort of hinted that they were similar to what's been said here. It was clear that he did not feel that the way the other government, the NDP had handled it was the correct way, but we can talk about that a little later. I don't think he didn't deny that climate change is taking place. It wasn't where he felt the focus should be, but he didn't outright say, as the leader of the BC Conservative Party has said, that it's real, but it's not important. He said in this area in particular, it's quite important. So the next question concerns health impacts of climate change. So it's this: the intense heat dome in 2021 killed over 600 people in the Lower Mainland alone, and it's evidence that people are more vulnerable to the impacts of the climate crisis. They are the ones who are more susceptible are low-income, Indigenous, seniors, and the very young and racialized communities. What will you do, or your party do, to address these social inequities and help these people to have better protection from climate impacts. So, Jed, if you'd like to take that question on.
Yeah, this is really important. We at the BC Greens, we believe that every single person has an equal right to thrive. And it's important, the lens of our platform through which we interpret every our success is whether the policy contributes to the well-being of British Columbians. So we will create the conditions for people to thrive. And we do have a policy for clean air, whether that's indoors, but also we have to think about forest fires and how that impacts the clean air. And the primary thing that we can do about that is tackle climate change now before it's too late.
Okay. Thank you, Jed. Sylvia, would you care to answer that question if you have it down? What are the health impacts and how would you address them and the social inequities that lead to them?
Yeah, so that's a really important topic because inequity in our province and around the globe is a huge issue. So my whole life I've worked in areas where we serve people who are disadvantaged by whatever the circumstances of their life happen to be, often social and economic disadvantages. One of the things that I think the NDP does very well is equity, and that is distributing public services to all of the people of the province, trying to get internet access, for instance, in the north, trying to get clean water to outlying areas, farms, people relying on aquifers, that sort of thing. It's really important that they take a two-pronged approach, though. So one is to deal with the immediate problem, which is when there's a heat dome, you need cooling centers. You need to open up your local arena. The things that we do in Salmon Arm already, as a city councillor here, we make those decisions every time one of these events happens. Where are we going to send people? Can the library stay open extra hours? Will the mall stay open until the sun goes down so that the air is cooler outside and people can get into a place that's got air conditioning and is cooler? The NDP has also initiated programs to install heat pumps across the province. There are grants for people installing heat pumps, which can be used as air conditioners in the summer. But the long-term focus has to be on equity, and that is increasing people's incomes, managing affordability issues, making sure that housing is affordable so people can get inside out of the heat. Those are the sorts of social programs that the NDP does very well.
Thank you, Sylvia. Now, the next several questions were actually directed at individuals. The first one was directed to individual candidates. I'm going to give a rough idea of what David Williams had to say, because he was the target for the next question. And I've partially answered it already. The question is this: John Rustad, the leader of the BC Conservatives, has repeatedly and publicly stated that climate change is nothing to worry about. Do you or do you not share this opinion, and why or why not? Is that the case? What David said when he was interviewed on the radio this morning was that he felt the climate crisis, it's a genuine issue. It's a genuine and serious issue. His solutions tended to be economic. He was very firm about his opposition to the carbon tax, felt it was unduly economically disadvantageous to many people. Then, but other than that, he didn't really see some of the solutions that the two candidates today have talked about were not on his radar. We didn't press him for that, but I'm just telling you that that's the way it was. The next question was for Greg McCune, and I think the answer is probably fairly clear. I'll just read the question and then what I've heard on the news. The question was, since you were formerly affiliated with the BC United Party, are you still in favor of removing the price on carbon? And if so, what alternative actions would you propose to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in BC? I don't know what actions to reduce greenhouse gas emissions he would undertake or support, but he definitely said that he would be inclined to remove the carbon tax. I think that's been identified as a prime, sometimes the major focus of both the BC Conservative and the BC United parties. The next question was for Jed. With Jen. Okay. The BC Green Party has been outspoken about the need to end fossil fuel expansion. What are your commitments in this area, and how can the Green Party move the legislature to help advance these policies?
In our platform, we want to see net zero by 2045. We will be establishing legally binding targets. We'll invest in renewables with a goal of 100% transition by 2030. And this will have a side benefit of creating green jobs. We want to see a just transition of energy jobs to green jobs. We will implement programs to promote energy efficient homes and sustainable transportation, free public transit, cycling and EV charging. One thing that we are going to not do is subsidize the fossil fuel industry. The current incumbent government has been given out billions of dollars in subsidies, $1.3 billion in 2021, while they spent $1 billion fighting climate change. While John Horgan was premier, he approved the Site C Dam, which was a $16 billion gift to the fossil fuel industry. We can redirect that kind of money into meeting people's basic needs, allowing people to thrive, resilient communities. We invest in healthcare, education, childcare, reintroduce $10 a day childcare, and affordable housing. It's amazing the amount of tax breaks and subsidies that the NDP has given out. And that is one of the primary things that we can do to tackle climate change. We should not be subsidizing highly profitable industries at giving them tweaking the carbon tax. EVs tweak the carbon tax so that the big polluters pay just one fifth of what we pay. And for fracking, the LNG Canada gets a 1/100 is what they price break, a 99% discount on water.
Okay, thank you then, Jed. We'll go back to Sylvia. Your question actually was first on my list, but I managed to avoid seeing it. So this is a question for you, Sylvia. Careful analysis has shown that promoting LNG projects and the expansion of fracking will prevent reaching BC's climate targets. David Eby acknowledged this just before he became premier. Will your party continue expanding pipelines and LNG, liquid natural gas, production, or will it set out a date to phase out fracked gas? There you go.
Thanks for the question, Warren. So LNG is a very controversial topic in BC, obviously, and probably in other jurisdictions as well. Some people argue that burning LNG has a lower emissions than burning coal or oil, and therefore it makes for a good transition fuel to get off more polluting fuels. However, we also know that fracking is a risky way to pull gas out of the ground. And because of the methane leakage in fracking, I believe personally that it's probably just as bad as burning any other kind of fossil fuel that we burn. My commitment is to be in the room for the conversations, to bring my strong conviction that this is something that we shouldn't be pursuing, to make sure that we're pursuing a faster transition to electrification so that this is no longer a discussion on the table. I agree with Jed that subsidizing fossil fuel is unfairly legitimizes them or helps them continue to do the polluting that they do. I also know that the NDP has changed the way that the royalties are paid on oil and gas, that subsidies are being decreased. I also know that it's not as easy as Jed thinks it is when you just walk into the room and say, hey, guess what? We're going to cut that off, because there are contracts in place. They are long-term contracts. And we have to be cautious about the kinds of promises that we make. But my commitment is to go ahead and with those, with my own personal convictions, and to stand up for the what the people here in the Shuswap want, which is to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions.
There we are. I'll just for the audience in general, indicate that a point of fact, and that is that analyses of the greenhouse gas productions associated with fracking are in fact, because of a high level of escape gas at the extraction site, roughly equivalent to that of coal. The greenhouse gas footprint of natural gas is roughly the same as coal. And there's new evidence that leakages called fugitive emissions are about 3 to 4 times greater than industry has presented. And that, of course, means that some of the discussions around this topic have been misguided, because they've made assumptions about the levels that are actually taking place, but they're much higher than have been presented. Now we're going back to questions for both of you. The next question is about where greenhouse gas comes from and what to do about it. The question is this, and Sylvia, I'll address it to you first. Like in many other provinces, the largest proportion of greenhouse gas emissions in BC comes from fossil fuel-powered transportation. What policies, legislation, and programs do you propose to reduce emissions in the transport sector?
So the transportation sector, we know from the studies that we did with the city of Salmon Arm, are approximately 50% of our greenhouse gas emissions in this region. A lot of that is coming from traffic that just passes through because we live on the Trans-Canada Highway. So some of that we can control and some of it we cannot. Provincially, though, there is more leeway to put in place policies that would protect us in a greater way. I think that there are big strides being made in things like electrification of transportation, electrification of school buses, which is a big deal in our region because we transport kids across a huge district. Charging infrastructure, it has come a long ways. And I mean, I can drive from here to Prince Rupert in my car that only gets 130 kilometers of range. No problem, because there is charging infrastructure everywhere now, less than 100 kilometers apart, mostly because of BC Hydro's installations. The challenging part is shipping big in big trucks. And we seem to have already in Canada made a decision not to stick with trains, unfortunately, because they're much easier to electrify than semi-trucks. And so we need to make sure that we are subsidizing research and development to make electrification more accessible for long-haul trucking. But maybe bigger than that is that we need to stop shipping things across the country and across the planet. We need to become more local. We need to shop local. We need to stick with things that don't need to be shipped by the fossil fuel industry, and electrify everything that's left.
Thank you, Sylvia. I must say the candidates are doing a great job of sticking within the time limits. That sign is quite a powerful indicator of what's happening. So Jed, would you care to comment on transportation being the largest source of greenhouse gas production and what the Green Party would do to reduce those emissions?
Yeah, I would just like to comment on something that came up just a minute ago. It's a very nice idea, Sylvia, that if you're in the room, you can impact the NDP and change them to be more climate friendly. They have spent the last 7 years making BC's worse on our climate goals, and they've done worse than nothing. In fact, the NDP has increased the subsidies as compared to the previous government and made our chance of meeting the climate targets even lower than if they had done nothing. So yeah, and part of the reason why is that, for example, one out of every five names mentioned on the Wilderness Committee's Dirty 30 list of people holding us back on climate change are current or former members of the NDP or closely tied. So we got to consider who there's reasons why the NDP is bringing us backwards in terms of climate policy. And what we will do as a BC Greens for transportation, reducing the greenhouse gas emissions of transportation, the main thing we can do is public transit. And we are going to provide free and fast public transit across the province, prioritizing local areas. And yeah, we're going to invest in the charging network. We're also going to invest in local businesses that are working to electrify fleets. And we are committed to local agriculture, sustainable agricultural practices, which sequester carbon and improve soils. We're also committed to local food production. We are going to invest in local food processing and local food distribution, because reducing transport of food would be something that would bring down our greenhouse gas emissions. And active transportation, we want to see a comprehensive review of what we can do to encourage British Columbians to have more access to active transportation, which is non-carbon emitting.
Which just proves to you, Jed, to all the rest of us, that you are psychic, because the next question on my list concerns active transportation. So, but it's asking both of you to get down to the nitty gritty, and I'll just read the question and then you can go ahead. Active transportation, which includes bikeability and walkability, as well as access to good public transport, is good for health, but also reduces toxic emissions in our urban areas and addresses climate change. If elected, what will you do? So now we can get down to the concrete part of that. What will you do to support active transportation in this riding? Jed?
I guess I've already...
Well, talking about some concrete things, this is how you can go in further.
One of the important factors in encouraging active transportation is making sure that we remove barriers to active transportation, and having adequate health care ensures that people are in good enough health to engage in active transportation.
That'll do it. Well, speaking from a health perspective, and I'll just throw in a moderator's comment, probably the benefit comes from the walking and the biking. Just for everybody to understand, it's reckoned that about 85% of our health is determined by our own behavior rather than by ministrations of my profession. So that's why I'm not running the election here. So, Sylvie, could you address this particular issue in improving active transportation, and of course included in that is good public transit? What would you do to support active transportation in this riding?
Well, my answer is a lot different than Jed's, because he talks about the possibility that if he got elected, this is what he might do, or this is what the Greens would propose. But I get to speak from a position where we're already doing that. As a city councillor, we are already instituting things to improve our transit, to improve our active transportation network, to subsidize transit for children. The province is already doing the things that Jed's talking about. I mean, I forget what year it was, but after the NDP got elected, they passed the Climate Change Accountability Act so that all governments that get elected here, whether it's the NDP or not, would have to be accountable to the promises that they make. And in November of 2023, a report by the Canadian Climate Institute said that BC was on track to meet 96% of their targets. So the premise that is being put forward that the BC NDP are not doing anything on climate change is just not true. So I think that the reason that the BC NDP's clean energy plan works is because it was developed with the Greens. Andrew Weaver was instrumental in joining the team of the BC NDP 7 years ago to put together the most ambitious climate action plan in North America. That includes things like subsidizing municipalities for new infrastructure, subsidizing municipalities for active transportation networks. I mean, the Shuswap region has been the recipient of millions and millions of dollars to subsidize our transit, to put active transportation routes in, to finish the Ross Street underpass with sidewalks instead of just cars being able to transit over to the other side of the tracks. These programs are already in place. They're already happening. We're already doing them, and we'll continue to do them.
Thank you, Sylvia. Now, we officially only have one more question on the program, but I'm going to take a moderator's prerogative and introduce a question that is sometimes challenging for all the parties and isn't addressed very often in the public discourse around climate. An article in the Guardian Weekly a couple of months ago pointed out that the wealthiest 1% of the human population produce as much greenhouse gas as the less wealthy 40% of the less wealthy. In other words, a luxurious lifestyle, which is common among the very wealthy, results in consumption and energy use and greenhouse gas production that is disproportionately large relative to the rest of the population. What would each of your parties do to address hyper-consumption and the hyperactive use of material resources that is now playing a major role in aggravating the climate crisis? So we'll go to Sylvia first, so we'll go backwards again. Sylvia?
So that goes back to the question, I think, of redistribution of wealth, taxing people in the highest tax bracket, the top 2% of the population. The BC Conservatives have been very clear that their programs and legislation will benefit those people, meaning that they'll get richer and they'll spend more money on things like trips to other countries where they don't even help our own economy, that where they are contributing greenhouse gases through their travel, where they're building bigger houses and bigger everything, bigger trucks, bigger cars, more vehicles in their driveway. It's really important that we continue to look at where big polluters are, whether they're big business or people that they're elite rich people, that they're paying their fair of taxes so that we can combat the impact that they have on the planet. It's similar to the idea of a carbon tax, actually, that we make sure that big polluters are taxed so that that money can be used again for things like carbon capture research, for electrification, for subsidizing people who can't afford electric cars to get electric cars. It all comes down to an equitable distribution of both wealth and responsibility. We have to be able to connect to what our impact on the planet is and take responsibility for that. And it's, I guess, one of the reasons why government legislation is so important, because we can't always trust that big polluters will police themselves. And we've seen how that turns out when the chickens are left in charge of the hen house. So I see my time is up, so I'm going to leave it at that for now, but I could add more.
Thank you. Jed, if you'd care to comment on that question.
Yeah, my first comment would be I'm in total agreement with Sylvia on this one. And that was a great answer. We at the Green Party would feel that the tax system needs a full-scale review. It's not working the way it is. We want to tax behaviors that decrease the well-being of British Columbians, and we want to decrease the tax on behaviors that increase and activities that increase the well-being of British Columbians. While we're talking about tax, I can't help but mention the carbon tax. We were the envy of progressives around North America. We were the first jurisdiction to put it into place, and it's a wealth distribution tax. It if done correctly, it has tremendous benefit for most British Columbians. Right now, all British Columbians who are earning under $42,000 per household are getting more money back than on average than what they are the tax is costing them. That's up to $1,028 per household. The only problem is that we're making the individuals pay and not the corporations. The NDP has carved it out with tax tweaks to make sure that the big corporations don't pay. And that's one thing that we do propose to change. The corporate tax rate in British Columbia is 2% until up to 500,000, and then it's 12%. We propose that there's an additional rate for people who are earning over a billion, corporations that are earning over a billion in profit. If done correctly, the carbon tax provides a wonderful means for us to the government to generate revenue that can be redistributed to lower income families, and it is right now. That's how it is working, and community projects that fight climate change.
Dip right in there, Jed. I would comment that David Williams was explicitly clear that his party, the BC Conservatives, would like to eliminate the carbon tax ASAP. He claimed that it was, or stated that he felt it was unfair that it penalized people who drove a lot. He didn't give much more in the way of explanation. He just sort of said it was unfair, primarily, without going into great detail, apart from that part that I mentioned. Now, I see some questions showing up in the chat, and because we have only two candidates here tonight, I would say that we could perhaps go to some of those. One final question that's on our list, and I think it would be a nice closure right now. Because it's simple and it's straightforward. So, starting with Jed, if you're elected, what is the first thing you would do to address the climate situation?
The first thing I would do is prioritize transitioning to 100% renewable energy sources by investing in solar, wind, hydroelectric, and other clean energy technologies. This includes increasing the capacity of renewable energy projects and promoting energy efficiency across all sectors, as outlined in our platform. We'll develop and implement a detailed climate action plan that sets specific measurable targets for reducing emissions across all sectors, including transportation, agriculture, and industry. This plan will involve engaging communities and stakeholders to ensure broad support and effective implementation. We recognize the validity of the IPCC's research on man-made climate change, and we think we need to transition to renewable energy and stop subsidizing oil and gas, which is what the BC NDP has done for 7 years.
Thank you, Jed. Over to you, Sylvia.
Thanks, Warren. So lucky for me, if I were to be elected and sent to Victoria tomorrow, we're on October 19th, all those things are already being done by the BC NDP. And so those are not decisions that I would have to be responsible for. I would have the luxury of joining the team, becoming a listener, learning all I could about where more can be done and what areas we need to pay more attention to, talking to people in the Shuswap to find out where their priorities are, making sure that I am bringing their voices to the table in Victoria. I think that's really where our strength is when we're all calling for the same thing and our entire region is speaking with one voice, and I'm sitting at the table bringing that voice to the table. That's how we get things done. It's how we work on city council. It's how it works at the provincial level. But the things that Jed is talking about, those things are being done. They are investing in all of those things. They are giving millions of dollars in subsidies to electrify, to get off gas furnaces, to install heat pumps, to trade your car in an electric car, to install more charging infrastructure. to support farmers markets, to support the local food programs in schools, which is primarily using local products. Serena Kaner does an amazing job of making sure that she gathers resources from local farmers every single week and redistributes them to school programs. And that those programs are funded by the provincial NDP. The programs that everybody is calling for, those programs are in place. They're ramping up every time that there's a new budget. There's more money invested in the very things that people are calling for. Transit, research, development, carbon capture, all of those things are being worked on already.
Well done. So we now have a little time to spare. We intended to go till 8:30 and it's only 5 to 8. So we have an opportunity to address some of the questions that have been posed by listeners. And I'm going to start with one that is pretty straightforward as a question. What does each of your parties think about the use of nuclear energy to address the climate crisis? Let's start with Sylvia. We'll go from you backwards to Jed.
Yeah, nuclear energy, it almost feels like it would be a step backwards, actually. So nuclear energy has been tried in a number of jurisdictions across the country and around the world. We know for sure that they come with significant risks. To install or build and manage nuclear facilities in an area like the Lower Mainland, for instance, where they're prone to earthquakes and everybody keeps talking about the next big one, sounds pretty irresponsible. However, if nuclear energy was really on the table, and I don't believe that it is, but if it was really on the table, we also know that it's incredibly expensive to develop. It's incredibly expensive to manage. They estimate it would cost 3 times the cost. Our hydro cost would triple because the run-of-the-river hydro dams and stuff that we have in place now are so efficient. They're supplying great power to the province already. The BC NDP has already gone hard into the direction of solar, wind, and geothermal, and they're now subsidizing every household in BC that applies, basically, can get a low-interest loan and grants to install solar on their house. We could be adding significant power to the grid through solar without ever building another piece of infrastructure at this point. We have the grid system in place. Nuclear power is not a good direction to go. I don't think anybody that's serious is contemplating nuclear power. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. There is talk of these small nuclear plants that are, it's not even out of the research and development phase yet. Like they're not even building them. So I don't think we're there, and I don't think that that's the direction we're going.
Thank you. Jed, your comments on nuclear power?
Yeah, the answer is simple. Nuclear power is the most expensive option for power. I see, it seems quite silly to invest in nuclear power, considering that the cheapest source of energy right now, the cheapest source of energy that we've ever encountered in human history right now is solar panels, photovoltaic energy, solar and battery, and other renewables like wind. These are the future. There's no reason for us to actually be investing any other energy source right now. Solar is cheaper than natural gas. We sell the most expensive natural gas in the world. Why would anyone buy it? Why is the NDP investing in natural gas? They've spent tens of billions of dollars. They've approved 3 new LNG export facilities. And they've ensured by doing that we will not meet our climate emissions goals. And who's going to buy this natural gas when they can buy solar panels and generate their own electricity for cheaper? It's the entire electricity that is being produced by the Site C Dam, which was a boondoggle of a disaster, is going into compressing and cooling natural gas for export. Who's going to buy our natural gas when there's cheaper alternatives? And when one of them is solar, which is much cheaper than any natural gas. So while the NDP has continued to tell us that they believe in climate change and that we're doing these nice little initiatives where you can have, you know, subsidize your electric car or you can have solar panels on your roof, these all sound great. They appease people. They sound good. But in the meantime, they go out and they subsidize fossil fuels over and over and over again. And there's no need for that. Just as there's no need for nuclear power, we should be subsidizing investing in the sources of energy that will be relevant in the future and that are the cheapest, which is solar.
Thank you, Jed. I would mention that the Canadian Association of Physicians of the Environment has been looking at nuclear power for a long time and has felt it inadequate for addressing the climate crisis for the reason, and just to give you one fact, it takes approximately between 10 and 15 years from design to installation to put a nuclear reactor in place. And that includes the new proposed small modular reactors, or SMRs, that Sylvia was referring to. In the time that it takes to set up a nuclear reactor, the 15 years, the same amount of energy can be produced within about 2 years using solar and wind. So the time factor, given the urgency of the climate crisis, is, by those who understand nuclear energy, have worked in nuclear power plants and understand how the industry functions, would be, to echo what both candidates tonight have said, it's too slow and too expensive. And that isn't even talking about the radioactive waste, which has not yet been addressed around the world, and the link to the nuclear weapons industry, which has been present since the beginning of the nuclear energy conversation. Moving on, I'm just looking at the questions in the list here. One question is to do with improving transportation for seniors. It's not exactly on topic, so I'm going to leave that one aside, except to say that the better the transportation is for seniors, especially public transportation, the better it is. Now, the next question relates very directly to the climate issue. The question is this: does your party have any plans to require contractors to build climate-friendly homes? And the questioner goes on to talk about homes built in a subdivision where they live, and they have been fitted out with natural gas piping so that they can take in natural gas. Now, there are some people who are not doing that. And there's a move in Vancouver, very, very much challenged by some industry interests, to block that process of making houses natural gas ready. So I'd address this to both of you. Are there plans for contractors at the policy level to build climate-friendly homes? Jed, would you answer that, please?
Yes, absolutely. That is exactly what we intend to do. And one thing that I haven't mentioned enough tonight is that part of tackling climate change is making sure that we take care of the well-being of British Columbians. And since we're talking about housing, we see housing is a universal right, and we want to make sure that British Columbians' basic needs for housing is met. We will invest in non-market housing run by nonprofits and co-ops. And we think that that's the answer to the housing issues and all the, but just, it looks like you want me to get back onto the question.
Yes.
What we're going to do is we're going to ensure that we can build houses in a proper green way. It's the only way for the future. It makes sense.
Thank you. Thank you. Sylvia?
Yeah, absolutely, Warren. So the STEP code is something that was brought in by the NDP, BC NDP, when they were elected. And the whole purpose of the STEP code is to move homes in the direction of being carbon neutral. Whether or not they are built now, or like in the future under the new STEP code, or if they've already been built and are being retrofitted, the goal obviously is to become carbon neutral. One of the ways that the NDP is making sure that we're able to actually follow through on building those homes is by training tradesmen. It's important that, for instance, I currently live in a house that's heated by electricity. I have 15, I think, solar panels on the roof. And over the summer, my electric bills were $13. I expect that that's going to go up significantly when my heating comes on. But when we wanted to install that sort of setup on our house in Sunny Bray, it was almost impossible to find someone that knew how and was available to come out and install the solar system on the roof. So it's important that we're training tradesmen to do the actual work. It's okay to have lofty goals and say, yes, we're going to get all this stuff done. But if you aren't putting the building blocks in place, it's an impossible goal to reach. So it's one thing to say, for instance, that the Greens have been talking about that they're going to make free transit available right across the province. And it's a completely lofty goal. I would love to see it happen, but the cost will be outrageous. And in order to put in the kind of transit system that the Greens are talking about at a level that would make people give up their cars, you're talking billions and billions of dollars. I'm not entirely sure what the financial plan is to fund that. But so it's important to put the building blocks in place. The BC NDP is doing that by subsidizing training and programs to get people trained to do the work. They've instituted the STEP code, which will be fully in place by 2027. All the pieces are already in place. We just need to give them time to bring it to fruition.
Thank you. The next question concerns the use of local natural materials for building. And I happen to know that this individual who's asked the question has been constructing a straw bale house, a very elegant straw bale house. But we could include other kinds of materials, and especially the local production thereof. Perhaps I could contrast the use of straw bales with various kinds of plasters to coat them with, for example, vinyl siding made out of polyvinyl chloride, which when burned produces dioxins and furans in extraordinary amounts, which are extremely toxic. So if we could give you a chance with this question, Sylvia, the use of local natural materials in building, any plans for the NDP to encourage that?
Well, the NDP already are encouraging that. They've been doing that since they got elected in 2017. The first thing they did was make for mass timber buildings possible so that they weren't limited to the low, you know, one or two story buildings. And now they can build multi-story buildings out of mass timber, which is far more carbon neutral and has less impact on the environment than if we were to be pouring concrete and using steel and all of the things that we've been doing in the past. The other thing that they're doing is investing huge amounts of money in research and development for low carbon concretes and low carbon building materials. Those things have been supported by the NDP for a long time, since before they got elected, actually. These are planks that were in their platform years ago. Low carbon building materials. I'm trying to think back to the question.
Local natural materials was the question.
Yeah. So one of the things that used to happen under the Rustad government was that great huge numbers of trees were being cut down in our local BC forest and they were being shipped offshore. That's been dramatically cut back now by the BC NDP policies that help keep raw logs in BC and developed here through manufacturing. And the companies that they are subsidizing to develop these low carbon technologies are local companies that are coming up with amazing ideas and just need the funding to bring them to fruition. And that's where the provincial government has been really instrumental in making sure that they have the funding they need to finish developing the products that they're working on now. Thanks for the question, Lauren.
Sure. Been outed. Okay, there's several more questions. I'm just having a quick look at them. This question is actually repeated word for word by two separate questioners, which is interesting. The Premier, Mr. Eby, has requested Prime Minister Trudeau for permission to allow BC to stop paying the carbon tax and opt out of the carbon tax. As the carbon tax is effective in reducing some greenhouse gas emissions, what would replace the BC carbon tax as an effective tool? Sylvia, maybe you should answer that, and then we'll go back to Jess.
Sure. Yeah, this has been a very controversial move that the BC NDP have made, actually. First of all, I think that the question is a bit misleading because they have not requested to opt out. What's happened is they've said that there wasn't a federal mandate to have a carbon tax, that BC would drop their provincial requirement for the same. Whether I agree with that or not, I wasn't in the room. I don't know what all of the discussion was about why they opted to drop it. I do know that the money that they were collecting through the carbon tax was helping to reduce our carbon footprint and our carbon emissions. And I also know that 100% of that money was redistributed to people who were at the lower end of the economic scale and couldn't afford to pay it. Every penny went back to the people of BC. From what I understand, the BC NDP plans to replace it if the opportunity was ever given to them. And at this point, that's not on the table. Everything will remain the way it is for now. But if they were given the opportunity for a made in a BC NDP land solution, they would probably move away from the carbon tax, which, you know, you have to remember was developed by John Rustad's government, actually. That was brought in 2016 before the NDP were even elected. So John Rustad suddenly doesn't seem to be supporting that, but it was his government that wrote the book on it. So, but I think that there are many effective tools for battling climate change. I think that the BC NDP is instituting a multi-pronged approach. And I think that they have been pretty clear that the plan, if ever given the opportunity to drop the carbon tax as it stands now, is to replace it with something that taxes big polluters. And, you know, they've followed through on hundreds of promises, 92 initiatives just here in the Shuswap. I have no doubt that if they're promising this, that that's where they're going.
Thank you, Sylvia. Squeaking it in. So, Jed, the same question.
Yeah, thanks, Sylvia, for mentioning that it was the previous government, John Rustad's government, that brought in the carbon tax. By offering to remove it, by removing it, you would be clawing back our progress on attaining our climate pollution emissions. And it seems quite in line with what the NDP has been doing as far as its support for the big polluters in terms of climate change and the oil and gas industry. I think it's awfully strange to me that you would say that the NDP would like to replace it with something that taxes the big polluters more, when what the carbon tax model that you receive, your party received when they came into government, did tax the big polluters fairly, equally as it does tax the rest of us. But you, David Eby, carved out and tweaked it so that the big polluters pay nothing on the first 65% of the carbon that they emit, and only half the rate on the remaining 35%, which means that the big polluters were left to foot the bill on the carbon tax as individuals. It's individual focused, while the big polluters get away with paying almost nothing. And yeah, we would keep the carbon tax because it's been a tremendously good way for us to redistribute wealth. Over about $1 billion of income has been redistributed to the lowest income British Columbians using the carbon tax, and it could be done better. We propose that it's more transparent and that the big polluters actually pay their share, because I mean, that's why it was created, right? And we propose that in addition to using it to give money to individuals, which is a good thing, when we need to give social assistance to the lowest income members of our society, we also want to have that money funneled into Indigenous-led initiatives and community projects that are for tackling climate change.
So we have probably time for a couple more questions. This question was originally directed at one of the people here, but I think it really should be directed to both. Given the amount of... The wording is, I'm quoting from the question, given the amount of lying and subterfuge in the oil industry, would you be willing to strongly advocate for breaking contracts in order to eliminate subsidies for the fossil fuel industry? So, Jed, if you'd like to speak to that first.
Yeah, absolutely. And that reminds me a little bit earlier, Sylvia, you mentioned that it's not just so easy because we have contracts in place. We can't transition from fossil fuels because of these contracts that are in place. Yeah, so the NDP has given 20-year deals to the discounted electricity rates for LNG Canada. That would be 32 to 59 million a year, works out to about $1 billion subsidy. They've given a $62 million a year in carbon tax breaks to LNG Canada, so that if they were paying the full price, that would have worked out as 2.4 billion, and that's a 20-year deal. They offered corporate tax income break on natural gas, 12 to 9% for corporations. They've offered to defer provincial sales tax to new construction on fossil fuel projects, which is essentially an interest-free loan, which is worth at least 17 million a year for 20 years. And yeah, we would break those deals. I mean, they make no financial sense for British Columbia, and these deals are ruining our future and ruining the future of my nephews, people's kids and grandkids. It's absolutely bizarre. The NDP has repeatedly told us, look at all these initiatives we're doing to fight climate change, at the same time dumping more money into funding climate change, or sorry, funding fossil fuel companies, which are causing climate change, than into tackling climate change. We can redirect that money. You were mentioning the transportation. Where's the money going to come from tree transportation? Well, if we get a lot of the cars off the road by providing adequate, good quality, fast transportation, then we don't have to spend nearly the money on building bigger roads. And there's billions of dollars we can take away from subsidizing the oil and gas industry that can be put into subsidizing this free transportation. This is the policy that we need to confront climate change.
I can see both of you learned to time your comments brilliantly with respect to the signs that come up. I think we have time for at least one last question.
I thought you were going to answer that.
Do I not get a chance to answer that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't realize I had. Yeah, I did start with Jed. You're right. Correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely want to address that. So I want to go back to 2017 when the NDP were running in the provincial election and the BC Liberals had put into place the Site C dam contracts. And it was the BC NDP who wanted to be able to look at those contracts and discontinue them if they got elected because they felt that that was not a good investment for BC. So it's easy to talk about those things before you get into government and before you get to look at the books and before you get to hear all the different sides of the conversation. Once the BC NDP were elected, they took a look at what was going on and the contracts that were in place. And it would have close to bankrupted the province to cancel those contracts. We would have spent billions and billions of taxpayer dollars paying out the penalties in order to walk away from those contracts. Contracts are written for a reason because both parties need to be able to count on that they're going to carry forward in the manner that they were agreed upon in the beginning. So, for the Greens to say, of course, we'd just cancel those contracts would be an irresponsible promise to make. Everyone would pay in the end for that, for sure. There are other ways that that can be dealt with. There are ways to negotiate with the contract holders to change the. They often have caveats written into them, timelines written into them. At the city level, we often have extensions that are possible or not possible depending on how things went during the initial contract. And those are the things that would have to be looked at.
So we're going to end with a question that is a little more down to earth and personal for each of you. For each candidate, that's for each of you, if successful in this election, what do you anticipate your largest obstacle to achieve your objectives once in office. Now, from the way the question is phrased, it means you personally rather than the party you represent. So, Sylvia, if you'd like to say what you think would be the biggest obstacle to achieving your objectives.
About 25 years ago, when I was fairly new to Salmon Arm, I joined a board for a local organization. I can't even remember which one it was, something to do with working with kids anyway. I really wanted to get involved in the community, and I really wanted to be involved in something that was making a difference. And after my first meeting, I was kind of frustrated because I was like, things are going to move too slow. What is going on? Why can't we just make a decision here at the table today and implement something tomorrow? Why are we making plans for a year down the road or 5 years down the road? And I quit. I didn't come back after that. I thought, this is just not going to be for me, because I want to be able to affect change now. And I think part of me, I mean, I've learned a lot through my union involvement and through my involvement on city council. I'm far more patient now, and I understand the intricacies of how large organizations work and how long-term planning is incredibly important. But there's also a part of me that's still fairly impatient. I do want these things to happen now. I want climate change initiatives started yesterday. I want, you know, it took me 4.5 years, I think, to get the city to rewrite the tree removal bylaw into the tree protection bylaw. And the members of the Environmental Advisory Committee would support me in saying that it took a long time, but we persevered and we got it done. And there is now an official new tree bylaw in Salmon Arm. And these are the things that are incredibly important to me. And I think I would find it a little bit frustrating that the larger the organization, I think, the slower that it might move. But when you're affecting change that is going to have a massive impact on a massive number of people, it's important that you do it slowly and methodically and looking at every detail and trying to avoid as many unintended outcomes
Thank
as possible.
Thank you, Sylvia. Thank you. Jed, what would you feel were the largest obstacles preventing you, if you were elected, achieving your objectives if you were in office?
The largest obstacle that would face me is actually the largest obstacle that faces every British Columbian in terms of as far as moving forward with our goals on climate change, and that is resignation. And you just heard it from Sylvia. There's nothing we can do about these contracts. We're locked in. Our government right now is completely full of people that are saying, we give up. We can't fight climate change. It's hopeless. But might I remind you that if the NDP hadn't made those contracts, those deals in the first place, we wouldn't even be sitting here talking about breaking them. In this election, you can vote for a party that denies climate change, or a party that gives lip service to climate change, but is beholden to lobbyists and will cave into their demands, or you can vote for the only party that believes in science, listens to experts, and will take real action on climate change because we're hopeful. It's time for resignation and hand-wringing. It's over. We need to make a wartime effort, and we need to get together and get the job done. It's by far the cheapest way, but the most economically responsible thing for our province to do. Our climate change has already cost, for example, 2021, $17 billion to our economy. So even if it's expensive, it's not nearly as expensive as doing nothing about it, as resignation. And that is the largest obstacle to getting anything done on climate change. So the BC Greens, our platform, we call it the Book of Hope and Joy. And I'm running a hope-based campaign. Like, what do you hope for a future? I hope for trees and lakes and a livable world for my family.
Thank you, Jed. We have several questions. I'll just, so people understand that we saw them. One's about the forestry sector and leavability. One is about the export of raw logs. And another is about motorized recreation, all of which have either direct or indirect relationship to the subject at hand, the climate subject. But I would like to just now, as we're approaching 8:30, hand over back to Julia to bring our evening process to an end. Julia.
All right. Good evening, everyone. And I really want to thank all the candidates, both of you, for joining us tonight. And very disappointing that the other three candidates were either unable or unwilling to join us this evening. I'd like to thank the timekeeper and our technician monitoring the chat for us. I also do want to mention that on our website, on the homepage, we do have an event posted for this evening. Keep an eye on that page because we will be posting the recording of this evening on that page. And there's also some additional resources there for you to check out that might be of interest. So please go and check out our website. So I just want to thank you all again and enjoy the rest of your evening. Thanks so much. And good night.
Cooks Jim.
Yeah, thank you for hosting.